I'm Jamie Barrier. My main band over the course of my life has been the Pine Hill Haints, but I've done a lot with the Wednesdays and the Invisible Teardrops, but a bunch of other bands too.
So when did you start playing? I know like the Wednesdays were you and your brothers, and I guess that's probably the first band that I can think of that that you were in. Like, is that how it started? Like for y'all just?
Yeah, started with my brothers.
Nice. How old were y'all?
I was probably 12. So Jeremy would have been 12, 11, 10, 9.
Wow.
Something like that, you know.
And what was the Wednesdays?
It was like, you know, in hindsight, it did all kinds of genres and stuff, but we were like, I don't know, it just depends on what era. We're a rock and roll band.
Nice.
A punk rock, rock and roll band.
And then tell me about the Haints. How did the Haints come about?
It was, we had a lot of really good bands coming to Auburn that all the locals would put on shows for, and so there's a lot of good music, a lot of people coming, and we just didn't have enough local bands to play, to open for them. And so I was in a lot of bands at Auburn, and all my friends were too, but in the evenings we would just sit around playing like country songs on the acoustically, and someone's like, hey, y'all, we need someone to open the show, y'all should come. So we weren't really a band, we just all went down and would play, and just kind of formed unintentionally. That's the way it started.
So who is in the band at the beginning?
Adam Pennington, we call him Sad Eye, and Matt Comer. He was from Florence here. Johnny, we call him Johnny Cobra, and then Bradley Williams, he played the washtub.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So that was what, like the mid-90s or late 90s or something?
Yeah, those guys had been following the Grateful Dead. And basically, a couple of them were selling drugs and living in, on the road and out of cars. And one of them was a member of the Rainbow Tribe, which is like this group that would meet out in the woods. But when Jerry Garcia died, all these people came back into town, and that's where I met them, because they would all skateboard at the same place I did. One of the guys was literally living in a bush where we would skate next to, and he had came back in town after Garcia died. Apparently there was a whole culture that followed the Grateful Dead, and he was part of that. And so all those boys all came home to wherever town. That was the first Haints.
Wow.
Pretty much.
Wow.
And I met him through skateboarding.
So was that traditional country like something that you had always like listened to or always played?
You know, when I was a kid, I was like, I hate country, you know. I was one of those kind of kids. I was always around it. And then I eventually got really into it. We would all go eat Mexican food on the night where the mariachi band would come, and it was just the absolute coolest thing in the world. So we're like, we gotta do that, you know. What is our culture like? We still don't know. I'm constantly trying to find what that is. Like, if I go to Mobile, I know what theirs is. I go to New Orleans, Lafayette, Boston, wherever. Milwaukee with polka, but when I come to the Shoals, I'm like, what is our cultural music? What is our Mexican restaurant with mariachi band? What would it be? And it's like, man, who knows, you know. that's part of the search with the Haints, trying to find that. So
wow. What is it?
I don't know. We used to do the Headless Catfish. Our side band were like, that was a literal attempt at that. It's like, we only play fish fries. There are all these rules, like only fish fries, only in the country, no shows in town. So that was our rule. You know, we were just trying to get deeper. It's like, what is it? What? Who are we?
And
I don't know. We're just like, Every time I think I've really hit on something, I remember there's all these fox hunters and they're dead now, but I went to church with them. They play music. I'd go to the fox pen, but secretly I'm not really trying to learn how to hunt foxes. I want to learn their songs. I'm like, I want songs that are native to this area. I remember one night, Texas Ridge in Waterloo taught me a song, and I was like, yes, this is so good. What song is that? And, you know, and he's like, I don't know, it's just a song I've played my whole life, and I played it. And then so the Haints went on tour. I remember playing it in Portland, and I'm like, guys, I got this song I learned from some fox hunters. And they were like, oh yeah, that song. Everybody plays that. That's it would be like McDonald's of bluegrass. And just something. You know, I was like, oh, okay, well. So I don't know.
So the search continues.
Search continues.
So you want to find the songs that are native to the Shoals in, like...
That's always been one of my big things. Yeah.
Wow.
And the Haints being something that represents the area. I love the Pogues from Ireland, who actually are not from Ireland. They're from England. But they're known for Irish music and what it... gifted to the world. It's like this, look at this, let's celebrate this beautiful thing that this small country gave to the world. That's what we're trying to do, the Haints. This beautiful thing, let's all celebrate that Alabama gave to the world. It's like, yeah, there's Hank Williams and, you know, the Delmore brothers from, and there's W.C. Handy, you know, like that kind of thing. That's what we're trying to do, like celebrate this beautiful thing, this form of music that we native to here, even though it, you know, we're like, oh, it's so dead here. That's why we're Haints. It's like mutt music. It's like, that's not an old native to Tennessee Valley song. That song's been recorded a million times by everybody, you know, like, oh, I didn't know that. You know?
Wow.
W.C. Handy, according to the stories, he'd go down to the river and just listen to him unloading boats, cotton bales off of boats and loading them on. And they're all singing these incredible songs. All he did was get all of these songs he heard and weave them. He wanted it to be respected. He's like, I don't want people to think of black people as, you know, as illiterate dogs and monkeys. Like, it's actually a deep, beautiful cultural thing that we've given the world. Is that, you know, it's a similar thing. I guess the number one source I've found for native music from this area would be W.C. Handy, you know, like us, because most of those songs he technically didn't write, but nobody knows who wrote them, but he's the first to record them and put them down and all that kind of stuff, you know. So it's super cool, you know.
That's awesome. Mm. So what W.C. Handy songs do you play, or do you think...
Like, we've done Careless Love and Careless Love and St. Louis Blues. I messed around with Yellow Dog Blues, but we're going to do more.
Nice.
Someday we'll do a record, you know, if we all live long enough, do a W.C. record.
So tell me a little bit about the Little Ryman. We just went over there and took photos, and you had been telling me for a while about going down there and just playing with kind of the old timers or whatever.
Yeah, like so in that quest, it dawns on me that I'm just another capitalist tool. It's like I'm taking greens that grandma used to grow and figuring out a way to market it and sell it, and that's a terrible thing. That I realize I'm just as bad as anybody. So the Little Ryman is almost a way of giving back. And it's not just there. There's a dulcimer place in Waterloo. That might be a place we could go. The dulcimer players play in Waterloo. But the best music is all on the Tennessee line towards Green Hill and Loretta. But the Little Ryman, it's just... there's no money being made. There's nobody making any money. It's not about money. It's about music. And they all get together and play, and everybody gets a turn. Everybody gets a turn. And you might hear some song by some old man that he learned from his granddad, and nobody knows where it came from. And then you might hear some song that, you know, Elvis Presley or Michael Jackson sang, you know, Ray Charles, you're like that. So it's beautiful in that sense. And I learned a lot about playing with steel guitar players, the little Ryman's. It's a bit more electric. I learned about playing with a lap steel and playing bluegrass with not just a stand-up, but an electric bass. And I learned how to... I played fiddle for hours there, and so it's a great place, I think, you know.
So who do you know, like, the history of the place, or like who started it, or like...
I don't know his last name, and he was a really good friend of mine, but that anybody that knows me, that's just how I am. I'm bad about that. But Harley, he might have been a cabinet maker. I'm not sure what his trade was, but I think that was a cabinet shop. And it was his. Used to, people would meet in Harley's house every Friday and play music. And so many people were coming, he outgrew it, so he moved to, I think they went to the, used to be a place called Fiddler's Cafe, a little catfish restaurant. I could be getting that wrong, but sooner or later he closed his workshop down and had music in there. And everybody would come. The first times I came were the best. Just a circle of chairs and all these fiddle players drinking coffee in the back, and they would just go in a circle around the room. But by the end, they had a PA and microphones, and people get mad. It was my turn to play, you know. Like, and they would have people that would be the MCs, and they would get jealous when another MC. It's just human nature, you know. It's fantastic.
So, did you learn some stuff there?
Yeah, I learned a whole lot. Learned a lot of songs. Learned how to play fiddle in different keys, and I learned a tremendous amount there.
And the other places.
Yeah, back when we didn't have any kids, and me and Katie would go on tour. We would go play somewhere every night of the week. That was the Friday night spot. There was somewhere every night you could find. You know, whoa. So that was the Friday one. Each one had its own unique thing, you know. So,
wow, that's pretty incredible. Awesome. So you kind of like, it's, I don't know, I remember back in the day, you just play guitar, and then one day it seemed like you'd play, maybe you've always played fiddle, but it seemed like one day you just started playing fiddle.
Yeah, that's probably how it was. To me, it's like I still have not gotten comfortable with it, you know. I can only do so much with it and stuff, but yeah, I probably was in my 30s or 30 years old or something, late 20s when I've got my first fiddle. I just sat on the porch and guitar, I started, I don't even know how old I was. I was a little boy. So I played guitar a long, long time before I started playing the fiddle. And when the Haints started, my brother Joey had a band that was his version of basically the same thing, except they didn't do so many covers. He was writing the songs, but it was the Natchez Shakers, and I played banjo. That's when I really started playing all the different instruments. I played bass, played banjo, played harmonica, played the mandolin. So, yeah.
So when we were down at the Little Ryman, you were kind of holding the fiddle differently than I've seen most people. Like, most people hold it, like, play it like a violin, I guess.
Yeah.
Or hold it up on their cheek or whatever. But you were kind of playing it with it, like, cradled in your arm almost.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that, like,
method. It's a style that was native to the Appalachian Mountains. And, you know, who knows where it comes from, but that's mountain... It's the way that's the way a mountain fiddler would play his fiddle. He'd hold it down low like that.
Did you like learn that, or was that something you just kind of started with?
You know what? I can see why they would do it now. I used to just think it was the coolest thing ever, and there was an old lady who would come see Headless Catfish, and you know, her last name was Pig, which I'm kin to some of the pigs, but her and her husband made sorghum. There's I don't know if they're alive. Hopefully they are. They're some of the last real sorghum makers, where they get a mule and they grow their sugar cane. And the day they do it, there's a line of cars that's like miles long to to buy it from them. But whenever she'd come see us play, she'd be like, let me use you to play a song on the fiddle. And she would do that. And I was like, yes, so cool.
Whoa.
Yeah. But it makes a lot of sense because when you're trying to play with someone, I can never hear them. All I can hear is myself, and that can be real frustrating. But when I play fiddle low, I can hear what everybody else is doing, and it helps me. When I'm playing with the fiddle in my ear, it's like everybody has to follow Jamie, and I'm half sloppy anyway. So it falls apart quick, but I can't even hear what they're doing.
Gotcha.
So who knows, maybe that's where that came from.
So, I kind of want to talk a little bit about, like, the Shoals, kind of the music narrative here locally. Yeah. Like, you've always kind of, to me at least, like, seemed like you kind of operate independently of all that. Like, it doesn't really affect you one way or the other. You know, you just kind of do your thing. And I've always thought that was really cool. But regardless, like, what do you think about, like, how do you feel like the music you do or however y'all have been received or whatever fits into the narrative of, like, the music legacy of the Shoals or whatever?
That's a good... It's hard to say.
What about, like, Black Owl specifically? Like, this has been... I mean, y'all have been here for, what, like, 15 years or...
Yeah.
Long time. Like, why did you start Black Owl?
All of the things that I used to think were amazing, I realize have doomed me and ruined my... Has it ruined my life? You know, so I have a lot of self-doubt where I used to have pride. So it all comes from punk. It's like, to me, the Shoals, that everything about it was... There was something drastically missing. It still is, and that's this punk do-it-yourself ethic. It just missed this area. But you know what? That's why the bands here do so well. That's why they sound so different. So you can argue they're a lot more untainted. So me, like, I was... When I heard that you don't have to know so-and-so, and you don't have to be a good player, and you don't have to hire a lawyer and a publicist. You can just like music and like playing with your friends, and that's it. I've embraced that. I'm like, really? Who are those people? That's where I want to be, and that's all I've ever adhered to. I'm like, I'm not trying to get famous. I mean, I want to be successful, but... And so with punk, I ended up meeting all these people who, like, were before. I'm like, maybe I'm crazy. Then you're like, all these people are like, you want to play in Texas? Here, you can play. Let my band play your shop, and you can play in Texas. And you realize there's, like, all over the world people doing that. And they're against that system of, oh, this girl's beautiful, and this guy, you know, they hire a lawyer, and they'll get you in a magazine. All of a sudden, you meet all these people who have defied it just as much as you have. It's all about the music, and that's where I went. And when I came to Florence, it's so foreign to this area, and for good reasons and bad, but I'm like, look, you don't need a stage. Just slide your furniture over and pass a hat and give it to the touring band. You know, that's been my aesthetic from day one, and, like, you don't have to go to this expensive studio. Just record yourself and put out your own record and then have a big show like we do with Whipper and sell them at the door. Like, pure, just old-fashioned, you know. Just try to make your music as good as you can, but don't take yourself too serious. So, in that regard, I feel like I'm different. But where we fit perfectly with everybody is, in the old days, they would make a record and it would be a hit all over the world or whatever, all over America, and hits and stuff. It was like Billboard magazine, top 10 hits. And now it's not like that at all. There's no hits coming from the Shoals. There's no hits. But we have John Paul and the Secret Sisters and Dylan LeBlanc. it's almost like alternative indie music. We're having an indie music boom, and the Haints are heavily a part of that. Like, I literally cannot find a drummer for Handy Week, and that's 10 days away. You know, like, at one time, Doc Daly's band was also the Bear, and they were also the Pollies, and they were also John's band. You know, like, we have this indie boom where the world wants to know what we're doing in Muscle Shoals, and it's the Shakes, everybody's doing well, and we don't have enough musicians to man the bands. That's beautiful. So, like, in that sense, we're a part of what everybody else is doing. You know, we're all... So I think we're having an indie boom, and I'm happy to be a part of that, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like...
Do you view, like, Single Lock in that vein of being, like, an indie... Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I view them as an indie label.
Do you think they have, like, that ethos?
That I appreciate the way they, like... They break every Jamie Barrier rule there is and then have smashing success with it. And I'm like, it humbles me. I'm like, wow, that's awesome. I like, you know, I would never study logarithms on downloads. Oh, if you do this, you'll get more down. But they do, you know. They're trying to figure out how to get people to hear your band. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great thing, you know. I like the way they're doing that. And they're like, I also like the way they're never seem to be negative. And I don't think you're like, oh, it's such a negative town. Well, you know, we're not negative than anywhere else. And, like, I like the way Single Lock, they're always real positive about it. I really like the way they're positive about it.
Yeah,
they've done nothing but help people around here.
Completely.
You can love them or hate them. They've done nothing but help us.
Yep.
So stoked.
Yeah, totally. So you've had a record label of your own for, like, what, 20 years or?
Yeah.
What's it called? Tell me a little bit about it. How many records y'all put out?
We have a record label called Arkham Records, and we also call it Black Owl Radio. It's been around since 96.
Wow.
We have 81 releases, really like 86 or 87, but technically 81 releases, so yeah.
How does that work? Like, do people just write you and say, I want to buy a record, or you just take the records out on tour? Or?
Both. My lifeblood has been like, yeah, we have distribution and people that order things. But everything I've ever done has been dependent on a live show. It's like, I mean, there can be an amazing band in town and you put out their record, but nobody in America has ever heard of them and they never will. But if you get out and play shows, then people will buy it. So that's what we've always relied on, yeah.
And you're still making 7-inch and
yeah.
Vinyl.
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome. I think that's all I got.
Stipped.
Do you want to say anything? You got anything else? Any other thoughts?
Oh, I'm good, man. I think it's real good.
Awesome.
I'll tell you, I can add something to it.
Yeah, go ahead.
My music, with my life and everything, it's heavily influenced by Native Americans. And there's Choctaw in my daddy's family, and I've always been really proud of that. Cherokee on my mama's. And I don't care what the trend is. Like, I've never... any trend that falls with me, I'm all about it because I need all the help I can get, but I'm not waiting on it. With the Haints, percussion is a heavy element, and percussion is huge with Native American music and African music, but I feel like the Native American element is, like, been super overlooked, and, like, one of the beauties of North Mississippi, like with Cedric and RL and Mississippi Fred McDowell, but more specifically Jesse May Hemphill and Sid Hemphill, who were, like, half Indian. I love that, and that's a part of this area. I've always, like, Hendrix and his wall and the Indian man. I love that stuff, man. I've always tried to find some way to incorporate it in the band. Somehow, even if you have no blood relation to it, it's to me, it's made a huge impact. Like Chief Colbert and his ferry. That's half the reason that we have this town, and I want to celebrate it in some weird way. So, yeah. Somehow that can mix in with the...
Was that intentional to, like...
Oh, yeah. I'm always trying to find some way to, like... Oh, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The Native American stuff is so cool and beautiful. I'm trying to find a way to, like, give back to it through the music. So...
That's incredible. I really never, like, put that together.
It's like with the Haints showing up with, like, buckets and sticks, and the music is like... And then, you know, it's just simple. It's like, and all the guys in the band are just like a tribe, and you're just like, you know, I don't know. It's all, the state song, The Night the Stars Fell on Alabama, that's based on a prophecy by Tecumseh that he gave in Tuscumbia about how the settlers were going to wipe out Native American culture, and if you didn't fight on this day, the sky would rain fire. It's like, you know, it's this real heavy thing. And then it actually happened, and it rained fire in the War of 1812. And now here we are today. It's like, we have a lot of songs about that. It's like this unknown part to our even state history, but it's really cool, you know.
I think the Haints are probably like, the only band from around here that has, like, broad appeal. Like, some teenager can love it, and then some grandma's gonna love it.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's, like, pretty powerful. And it's been that way for a long time. It's, like, the only band that, like, everybody can really get something out of. And they may be getting different things out of different elements of it. But, like... It's has the most broad appeal of any local band or any band that plays around here, I think. And I think that's pretty special. I don't know how you can do that. I don't know how that's possible.
I feel like with 10, 20 years ago, if I'd have went for it and applied myself, it probably would have went farther. I'm on the other end of it now. I'm now a gray-haired guy with wrinkles playing it, and I don't care. I had a good time. You know, but I'm like, did I underachieve? You know, we toured and played our hearts out, so it's not like we were lazy. We were always doing something, but yeah, I always took that with pride too. That's awesome. Cause it's gotta be honest, you know. Kids can see through that fake junk. It's like, you gotta be honest about it.
Yeah. I was trying to think. We were talking on the way here about Travis and Little Richard. We were talking about Little Richard dying and his, like, he recorded here and all that. There was something in there. I was like, I got to circle back around and ask Jamie about that. And I can't remember exactly what it was.
Whoa. Call
but
me.
But anyway.
Call me.
It's all good. I really wanted to focus on you instead of, but you know, so you're like an encyclopedia. You know so much about all of it. So
I'm an addict. That's all.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, dude.
Yeah, no worries.